Hello and welcome to Own Your Health with me, Katie Brindle. Now, we have a wonderful episode today with someone who I'm really inspired by and really looking forward to converse with, who is the incredible Linda Magistris. Now, she set up the Good Grief Trust, and I'm going to bring her in straight away to start explaining why she set it up, what it intends to do. But grief is an emotion in Chinese medicine that we always align to the lungs, and it's something that happens to everybody in some shape or form. And the reality is that if we don't address our grief in the right way, then it can have seriously long-term impacts on our health. So I'm going to be introducing the health aspect later on in the episode. But to start with, I'm going to introduce Linda. Linda, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
So I thought perhaps to start with, I'm going to ask you a question that I'm sure you've now answered hundreds and hundreds of times, which is what happened in your life to draw you into creating the Good Grief Trust, and what's the intention of it?
Yes, well, I mean, it was back in 2014, actually. My partner died, Graham. I was a program called Grange Hill many years ago, back in the day, in the 70s, and Graham came into my life then, actually, and he was older than me, and he came in as a director. I was in a child actor, and we worked together, and then he went off, and I didn't see him for 30 years, didn't hear anything. And then suddenly he came into my life while I was walking around Wimbledon Village one day. And that was it. We were together for 8 years. It was just crazy, really, because I think now it was just meant to be. Because sadly, after 8 years together, he was diagnosed with a rare tumour. It was a soft tissue sarcoma.
Right.
And he was writing a script, actually, and yeah, and then sadly 5.5 months later he died. And it was when my life whole sort of changed, really. I mean, I lost my dad 24 years ago this year.
Wow.
And that was really awful. I mean, he was my rock, he was just everything to me. But when I lost Graham, my whole world turned upside down, and I thought I was going completely mad, to be honest. So I went off to the GP, and I really need some help. And he didn't really know where to signpost me. So he had a leaflet for Cruise, which is a big national charity. And I tried to access this counselling service. But where I lived in London, there was a waiting list for about 6 to 8 months.
Mm.
And at that time, I really couldn't wait 6 to 8 hours. You know, I was really struggling. So I had a girlfriend who lived in Greenborough. And so I just gave her address. I went along and I did these counselling sessions because I heard they had some available there. And I sort of did 4 sessions and just cried my way through it. There was like a clock and a box of tissues, and she was very nice, but I just sort of didn't see a way forward. It wasn't for me.
Mm.
So I went back to the GP and I said, look, I'm really struggling. It's just not for me. What else have you got? And sadly, at that time, he had nothing. He had no other way to know what charities or support services or groups were around. So he offered me antidepressants or sleeping tablets. And I said, look, you know, I don't even take a paracetamol. I don't take headache pills. And it's just not for me. And that was it. So I left there thinking, well, what am I supposed to do? So I Googled and I put in widowed, young, you know, sort of grieving. And up came this incredible charity. And it was for people who are under 50. And it was called Widowed and Young. And I met these incredible people who'd found a way forward with their life and found hope. And I became London coordinator for this charity. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. So I went back to my GP and I went back to the hospitals where Graham was treated, big teaching hospitals in London. And I said about this charity and they'd never heard of it.
Crazy.
And I thought,
all hospitals should know about this.
Exactly. Because this charity was huge. It was national. It had thousands of people as a member. And I thought, well, hang on a minute. If this is one really key charity that is right for those people who are under 50, why did the health professionals not know? And I know now because sadly, back then in 2014, we didn't have a national database. We didn't have an online resource.
No.
So what I did, I piggybacked on a program called Building on the Best with the National Council for Palliative Care. And I met many, many bereavement teams across the UK. I visited N Hospital Trust and said, look, if you could have something that would really help your work, what would it be? And they said an online resource, because they were working out of leaflets and brochures and pieces of paper that they had to keep having reprinted. So you couldn't keep those numbers and those website addresses to date.
No.
So we now have that. So yeah, back in 2016, we launched the database. We have over 1,000 charities and support services under the one.
I'd like to talk to you about our two wonderful sponsors, because we don't take on anybody, you know, we're very picky here. So the first sponsor is The Naked Pharmacy. Now, the reason we love working with them so much is because on this podcast, we cover a wide range of health advice. I mean, from any given week, I'm going to be talking to you for anything from shingles to sinusitis to eating chia seed rye bread in order to get good bowel movements in autumn to decluttering to a myriad of different things. And you need a partner that can kind of run with you at the same time. And The Naked Pharmacy is just that, because they have supplements for everything, which means whatever topic we're talking about, you can pop over to The Naked Pharmacy and they will have supplements to support this information. Now, not only that, they are very content rich. They have an actual pharmacy, which is what's so great. So just as we as a brand here on Own Your Health are very keen to answer all your questions and to keep the dialogue going with you, to offer the advice as much as just products themselves, The Naked Pharmacy are the same. So they have the products to match the content, but they also have the expertise as well. Now, they cover anything from stress to sleep to mood to energy to gut health to weight management and pretty much everything else besides. So they're also going to give you the support as well. And they're offering us a 20% discount. If you use KT20 at checkout, which is at thenakedpharmacy.com, and you pop in KT20 at checkout, you will get a 20% discount. So I want to bring your attention to another brilliant brand, which I've been orbiting around over the past few months, and I really like it. It's called Equi, which is short for equilibrium. Now, you can pop over to their website, which is equilondon.com, and it is a brilliant brand of supplements. I've been taking the powders, which I absolutely love. They are absolutely full of nutrients. You've got multivitamins, prebiotics, probiotics, digestive enzymes, superfoods, adaptogens, we've got ashwagandha, and then we've even got mushrooms from traditional Chinese medicine as well. So it's just ram-packed. But because it's so packed full of the good stuff, they've taken out all of the bad stuff. So we don't have chemicals, we don't have fillers, we don't have binders, all of that's been taken out. So it's just pure nutrition. Now, I take a couple of teaspoons after a meal, either breakfast or dinner, and I just mix it in a little bit of plant-based milk. You can do it in water, but I drink it like a little shot, because you only need sort of two rounded teaspoons, and that will do the job. And the thing that I like about it is that they've just taken a holistic approach. So it's not a supplement for this and a supplement for that, because personally I find what I end up doing or did in the past was I'd end up with a shelf full of supplements, and then I'd just get a bit fed up with it, because I'd end up on sort of 12 different things and then I couldn't really remember what was doing what. Whereas with this, it's one jar doing one thing and it's working with everything. So it's working with my hormones, it's working with my digestion, it's working with my immunity, energy, focus, skin, mood. So everything just kind of gets wrapped up into one. Now, I like that, because that's kind of fuss-free supplementation. So that's why I'm really excited to explain that brand to you. So that's equilondon.com. Go and have a look at their website. Personally, I like the powder format. That's always my way. I like a little shot of milk. Don't put it in hot drinks. I like it just room temperature milk or a little bit of room temperature water. Get it down the hatch and you're sorted. So is the Good Grief Trust, so you've got a little umbrella pin there. So it is like an umbrella organisation. And so if anyone needs some support right now listening to this, they just come straight to your website, and within that is everything that it's like a one-stop shop for everything you need.
Exactly. Yeah, it's immediate access to choice, because we know now that choice is the thing that most people who are grieving need.
Yeah.
Because grief changes from day to day, yeah, month to month, year to year, right? So grief is completely unique to you, and it depends on how you're feeling or the stage that you are, if you like. There are no real stages of grief, but where you are in your life and where you are now as to what you need. So we have a whole choice. So somebody could land on the website, they literally put in their postcode, and up will pop the charities, the support services, the helplines, the groups, the cafes now, because there are many grief cafes. So then you make that choice. And it's very, very clear. So if you've lost a child, you go to that page, a sibling, a friend, a partner, parent. And immediately you know what we call, there is help and hope in one place, and a way forward in your life, really.
That's brilliant. So that's really interesting what you just said about there's no stages of grief. So with, as soon as you said that, I thought, okay, so what are there? And just thinking from a Chinese perspective, I was thinking, presumably there are intensities. I mean, is there any kind of differentiation, or is it just from the Western perspective, just grief? And it just depends on the nature of the relationship, or is there intensities? Like, where is that?
Well, one of our mantras is grief can be complicated, but access to support should never be. So grief can be complicated, but it's really a natural response to loss and love. You know, again, we say, you know, that sort of grief is love with nowhere to go, because you've loved that person. And where are you going to give that love? Because it's gone. And often, you know, your future is gone, your past, your history with your parents. There are so many complicated issues around grief. But what we do know now is that we find support and we find other people who understand from day one. That can be our lifeline. You know, and then you can find what you need along the way, because grief is going to be with you forever. You know, you've lost that person. We're never not going to lose them. You know, they're always going to be in your life, but sadly, they're not physically with you.
So, yeah.
You know, you carry them with you in your heart. But, you know, to try and find the support that you need is absolutely vital, particularly in the really early days and weeks and months, because it can be incredibly lonely and isolating when you're grieving.
I mean, it is the most excruciating of human emotions. Loss is just, it's overwhelming. I mean, it's just overwhelming. And I remember when I was going through, it's just like that extreme grief. And I remember you can't sleep, you can't function, you can't stop crying. I remember I felt like my toenails were wringing themselves out. I could literally feel my toenails. It was that bad. And if I ever did fall asleep, which was very, just about sometimes, even I did take a few sleeping tablets for a short while at that time. They didn't even work, maybe 2 hours of sleep. And then you'd get like 1 second of respite first thing when you'd wake up, and then you'd feel sort of like you had light and sky. And then immediately it would come straight in. It's like, oh my God, it's horrendous. And then the day would start, and then and off we went. And the other thing that I found interesting about, obviously we're having this interview, we're in the UK and, you know, some British born people talking here, is I personally have found that during the grief process is that compared to, say, many other cultures in the world, because I was just saying before you came on, actually, in another podcast, I used to live in Mexico. And so therefore, it gave me a very interesting angle on funerals and processing of grief. Now, in Mexico, they literally would traditionally pay for people to come and cry at the funeral, that they were literally there to express emotion, to elicit emotion out of you, so that when you were going through the burial process, you would be there to kind of draw the emotion out. Whereas that was a sharp contrast for me when I'd perhaps experienced funerals in the UK, where you just kind of sit there and you go through what I personally thought was quite a boring service and didn't really elicit any emotion out of me, and then sort of go back to someone's house and have a cup of tea and a piece of cake, and that was kind of it. And you just think, well, that's not it. I mean, perhaps it might have been if you didn't love that person so desperately that it was absolutely wrenching. But when it's wrenching, there never felt to me the appropriate time to express the feeling. And traditionally, even in this country, you would have worn black. That was the colour to say to people, I'm in mourning. You need to be nice to me. You've got to treat me differently. I'm sensitive. I'm in pain.
Yeah.
Now, I'm, funnily enough, sitting here wearing black, and I'm thinking that was not why I would put a black jumper on. I put a black jumper on because I thought, no, I look nice in this. So she says vainly. But, you know, in the old day, look at Queen Victoria. You know, she wore black because it's a sign of mourning, and it was a sign of be nice. And I think so much with grief is that we're just sort of expected to just simply carry on.
Yeah,
and you can't, absolutely. Can you?
No, you can't. And that's absolutely where I tried to sort of find a way to raise awareness of the impact of grief. You know, we run campaigns, for example, the National Grief Awareness Week, which runs between the 2nd and the 8th of December, to try and get us all talking about grief and loss and being more open about it. You know, our first hashtag was Open Up to Grief. You know, it's just so important to bust those taboos around grief and loss, because as a nation and as a culture, you know, as you said, it's really difficult and awkward to know what to say to people. We can't even process our own thoughts and feelings, let alone trying to reach out to help other people as well. So it's so important to get the language right, to know, you know, what to say and what not to say, and not to leave that person, for example, alone in their grief, you know, to phone up, to text, to just turn up, we say, you know, just turn up and knock on the door with some food or take the children out maybe for a walk or the dog or do some shopping, practical things, because grief is exhausting, you know, and when you're trying to, the funeral is generally, up until the funeral, is generally the busy time. You're in a fog, everything's happening. Then people come to the funeral, you say, it can however you want it nowadays. You know, there are a lot of celebratory funerals. We try to celebrate life, but obviously it depends on the circumstances, you know. But after the funeral is often the time people go back to their own lives and we're left, you know, you're left alone and people expect you to go back to normal, which never will happen. Yeah, exactly. So every aspect of your life has changed. Mm. Every single aspect of life has changed.
Yeah.
And that is never really recognised. So these sort of campaigns that we run and the awareness that we try to create is just so that we can actually just normalise grief and get those feelings normalised, because when you're grieving and you're feeling all these incredible emotions that are like a mixed up ball of wool that is just a big mess, you know, it's like Spaghetti Junction. You're trying to work out, is this right? Is it wrong? But actually there is no right or wrong to grieve. We know there is no right or wrong way. As long as you are finding a way forward and that you are supported, then that's fine. Because you're going to go up and down and it's going to be a massive tsunami. We're going to get triggered. And then maybe, you know, we talk about those analogies of being out in a storm on a raft and the wind is rocking you and pushing you and everything. Suddenly you might find a plateau. You might have some calm and peace and joy. That's fine. And that's absolutely fine and okay. But, you know, often we're sort of riddled with guilt about what should we do? What shouldn't we do? But, you know, grief is life. Once you lost someone who's meant something to you, that's it. You will be grieved. But with the right support, you can grieve in the right way, if you like. You can find help.
And so you were the person who sort of spearheaded for Grief Awareness Week, which is this week, i.e. the week that we're sending out this recording, which is this week. So what made you kind of, first of all, what made you think, actually, we need this? And secondly, how did you sort of make that a thing? How do you create a week?
Well, I've been insane. Stuff right from day one. Since Graham and Mike have been like, why is this not being done? I was sort of bewildered that people didn't understand the impact of grief. You know, we talked about end of life and palliative care and you know, looking after people at end of life. But as soon as somebody left the hospital and they'd left their child or their husband or their wife, or the police had knocked on the door with a sudden death and there was a road traffic accident or murder or manslaughter or terrible, you know, suicide, often those people sadly left, you know, and this is the research and the other sort of feedback that I've had over the years and we've had as a trust and many other charities and support services is that they struggle to be recognised for the work that they do, because actually grief and bereavement has never really been recognised as something that we need to address, even through the professionals, which now thankfully has changed over the past 10 years. I've certainly recognised it. So it is really important. So back then, I thought, well, okay, we need a charity. Everything is under the one umbrella. It's not difficult, as far as I was concerned. Bring everyone together to say we have hundreds, if not thousands now, over 1,000 charities, all under the one umbrella, easily accessible. We also have a card, actually. This card is called the Good Grief Trust Condolence and Signposting Card. And this, I wanted to sit alongside the database. So these initiatives just sort of naturally came to me because I thought, we need a tangible resource that is very simple, very hopeful. And that person who's in the hospital or the police that we work now working with, the Metropolitan Police and family liaison officers, funeral directors, crematorium, they need to give that person something that they can take away with them, that family, that they know that they can find the help. So basically, this is a condolence signposting card as well. So it's got a little space here now. You can just write, I'm so sorry, got a QR code direct to the Good Grief Trust. And it's got a little credit card here that you take out, you put it in the wallet, and you've always got the Good Grief Trust near to hand. And this is being used by bereavement team up and down the country, hospitals, nurses, GP. But the campaigns, so for example, National Grief Awareness Week, I thought, well, actually we had a baby loss awareness week and we had children's grief awareness week. And that was it. But I thought, well, as you've said, towards Christmas particularly is such a devastating time for people are grieving. You know?
Awful.
It's so awful. You've got the empty chair, you've got family and friends, you know, running around having a fantastic time.
Yeah, the expectations.
Yeah, expectations, exactly. It's around also the weather, you know, that it's dark, it's gloomy. December, January, February are often the most difficult time for mental health issues. So I thought, right, if we can have something at the beginning of Christmas that will give people the tools, they know that they are supported, and give the professionals a time to raise awareness of the work they're doing. So again, we know where to turn for support. So in 2019, we launched National Grief Awareness Week. So I literally just looked it up and thought, do we have an awareness week for grief? No.
No, of course
not.
So
we just create it, literally. You should create it.
And where do you register it? Is there like an Awareness Week Association?
There's an Awareness Day website. Awareness Week, Awareness Campaign. So you register it there, like National Hug a Tree Day or Stroke a Dog Day. So you put it up there, and then also...
Own Your Health Day. Actually, Vix, get on it.
Exactly. I thought, well, you know, this is really, really important. I want a month, but, you know, we thought we'd start with a day. Well, with a week. But what we did is in conjunction with the All Party Parliamentary Group on Bereavement Support. So that is something that I co-founded back in 2017. So we work very closely with government. There was no APPG specifically for people who are grieved in the UK. So there's lots of All Party Parliamentary Group doing incredible work, but there was nothing that focused on helping people who are bereaved. So I co-founded that with an MP back in 2017. And now we have... gosh, almost 200 MPs, you know, charity support services under our umbrella at the, working with. So we basically put that together. I put it towards the APPG and we then launched it. So it's the Good Grief Trust campaign that happens every year.
It's absolutely incredible. I mean, I'm assuming you're no longer acting.
No, I'm not. I haven't had the time.
I was going to say, I mean, it's astonishing. Because you started this in 2018, didn't you?
Is that... No, 2016,
sorry.
We actually launched the
you
charity.
Launched.
Yeah, 8 years this year.
That's right. So it's incredible. I mean, in such a short space of time, you have absolutely well and truly put grief on the map and on the agenda. So what would be... Now you've achieved so much, so what happens next?
Well, this card was part funded by the Department of Health during COVID.
Wow.
They got out 150,000 cards. Could say they recognised the worth and the importance of making sure those people who were grieving at home during COVID had a card. So those went out to every NHS trust in England and over 3,000 GP practices. But that's not enough.
No.
You know, 650,000 people die every year in the UK. We need 650,000 cards distributed across basically the four nations. So that's one of the key visions of the charity. Obviously, the database grows all the time. We're launching a new National Grief and Bereavement Cafe map, because last year's campaign, National Grief Awareness Week, was all around trying to get people together in cafes. Because I'm sure, you know, as you know, going just having a cup of tea or coffee and a piece of cake with someone can be really lovely. And you can share so much more when you're in the sort of really familiar environment. So we launched Better Together Cafes last year, and we've now got hundreds of organisations, charities, of nurses, of hospitals going out into the community with grief cafes, which actually we started back in 2018.
And how does that work then? Is that just like your local Starbucks has signed up to something, or is it?
Well,
is
no,
it more than
these
that?
Are these are people like hospices. So we've got hospices who will train volunteers in the community, and they, for example, train people who will go into the local churches and will run independent cafes. Mm. They might have something actually in the hospice itself, but generally most people who've lost somebody in a hospice maybe don't want to actually go back to the hospice. Mm. So they're quite happy to go out into the community and have a cafe. We've got some amazing cafes that will be run up in Liverpool with the nurses that we work with up there. So they've got something like a month's cafe, and they've got 20 hotels across the whole of Liverpool. So they have a bereavement nurse, a travel bereavement nurse sit in there, and people come for a cup of tea and a cup of coffee and chat through their, you know, their sort of issues, really. So they're peppered all over the place. These are community groups. We've got wonderful ones maybe who had a bereavement through suicide that are now creating suicide groups for people who have been infected by that. Those really targeted groups are happening all over the country, which is amazing.
And do you promote... because obviously a lot of what you've been talking about is social interaction, understanding. So kind of the sort of the mental health aspect of grief, and grief therapy and grief counsellors. But are there sort of body workers or anything along those lines? Because from a Chinese perspective, we always attribute emotions into organs and into the physical body itself. So we do all sorts of techniques, which I'll do one in a second. But, you know, does it recommend body workers, or does it have a treatment protocol for people, or does it feel that just kind of verbal therapy and friendship and community? I mean, is that enough?
Well, no. I mean, we offer a whole sort of whole spectrum of support services, because, you know, it's completely down to that individual, as you're saying. It depends on what relates to them, what works for them. So we don't have anybody on the database that charges. So everything is free. So it could be a charity, a support service, a group, but it could also be a laughter yoga session. It could be people literally going to yoga that can obviously help them to manage their emotions. We've got creative writing courses, retreats, kickbox sessions. You know, there's so many different things. Just group chat, where you can just type into the computer and you don't have to actually see anybody. There's helplines, obviously. It's absolutely down to that individual as to what they access that's right for them. Mm. So we pretty much recommend lots of different places. So if somebody comes to us and said, look, we're offering this service, we would definitely look at it and see whether we could add it onto the database.
Wow. So, but everything's free. That's so amazing.
Completely free. Yeah. Wow. Completely free. So, say for example, we would suggest people to go to the British Association of Therapists, you know, so that they can find their own therapist, because we can't recommend a personal counsellor or anything, because number one, we don't recommend anyone who charges, but also that's really personal relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And anyway, how could you? Because there's millions of people across the huge great nation, so it wouldn't work. I mean, that's amazing that this whole resource has come out of such extreme pain for you, and yet you've created something so beautiful and helpful to thousands, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. 650,000 deaths a year, and you've been going for what, 8 years now? So my maths isn't good enough to work out what that is, but that's millions of people. So I mean, that's just so beautiful. And I think one of the things, because as a Chinese doctor, you know, we deal with grief a lot in clinic, and actually I've got a free fact sheet on it as well, from a Chinese perspective. Anyone's interested, it's right there for free. You know, you can have it, do with it what you will. But one of the things that is quite useful for people to know is that in our medicine, grief is the emotion of the lungs. So it sits in the chest, and the lungs are the governor of the heart. And one of the things I say a lot on the podcast is that you have these five key organs in the body, and they all completely relate to each other via different circuits. And so when you were talking about the fact that grief feels like a kind of ball of wool of emotion, and it's so hard to even know what you're even feeling. It's just awful. And what happens is the kind of the compression of the agony of what you're experiencing, just it squeezes the lungs, which gives them an inability to normally expand and contract, because the grief kind of like this, it just kind of creates a stasis. And so that then that suddenly the lungs aren't doing this, they're kind of going like this, which means they then can't govern the heart, which means the heart then feels restricted itself. And then of course the heart is the commander of the rest of these organs, and so everything instantly, just like that shock, and then everything is just kind of punneled into this kind of complete stasis. And we talk a lot in Chinese medicine that 80% of the problems that we feel are responsible by the fact that circulation isn't flowing smoothly, i.e. this stasis that does stops the circulation, stops the organs, then the purging and the nourishing of the body does. So everything just kind of goes wrong. And I think that's one of the reasons why grief is the most extreme emotion that we feel, you know, more than anger, more than pain, more than fear. You know, it is absolutely stricken. I mean, you are stricken with grief, and it is a really good word in the English language. It feels, it strikes, and you are stricken. And it's absolutely just kind of, you get that sort of white noise in your head, and then life just feels like you're in a different tempo, and you don't belong in the world anymore. Nothing makes any sense whatsoever. And one of the things that we do to help that is to just tap the chest. It's a really useful technique for people to just know, if anyone's sort of listening right now, is normally when I do these body techniques, I call it body drumming. And so you take a loosely clenched fist and you drum the chest. But actually, because you've been grief stricken, that's too painful, that's too much. So you tap the chest and you just do that gently, gently, gently. And as you breathe out, you just imagine that you're breathing out the pain, because you're literally tapping it out of where it's gone straight in. It's like a dagger gone in. So you can just gently, gently, gently tap. It does help as a free technique when it, because as you said, it goes in waves. And sometimes you get a lull, and sometimes you kind of almost feel like you can vaguely function, and then it comes back again. So, and that comes and goes, and it's completely unique to the person as often as that happens, if at all. But this helps. Interestingly, in Africa, I noticed just from sort of studying this, just because I wrote quite a big masterclass on grief, but, you know, we would beat the chest and wail in some cultures, so that you would actually really beat the chest out. Now, I personally, from a British cultural reference background, found that was too much when I was going through it. It was too extreme. I couldn't handle it. So the tapping and the breathing, I found a really, really useful technique, because we do feel that, well, we do understand in Chinese medicine that the emotion is inside the body and it is governed by an organ, and the organ is lungs. But it doesn't, although these techniques are helpful, at the end of the day, it is one of these things that having an organization like yours is just going to be so invaluable, because just having other people around you that just understand how it feels, because that's, I think, compassion is one of the highest expressions of human emotion, and compassion is the high emotion of the liver and the wood element, and grief is the low energy of the lung and the metal element, and metal controls wood. So if you can up the compassion, it sort of helps cope with the grief over, because grief's down here and compassion's up here. So if you're going into a cafe and you're talking to someone that just knows how you feel, go, I know, I feel it, I know. And it, as you say, it can't bring the person back, but it can somehow help you transition so that you can create life, which presumably is what you've personally done.
And we all need hope, don't we? Go forward. Find someone who has found a way forward, who's been through very similar loss. Trust absolutely is so crucial for many of us, because then you see that path to, for your life, because so many people, you know, don't think that can carry on, because obviously it's just so catastrophic and it's so devastating and it's absolutely overwhelming. And to get up in the morning and even to have a cup of tea or shower is just too much, because your life is like, what is the purpose? You know, where are we going with this? To find other people who say, look, it's rubbish. It's the worst thing ever that have ever happened in my life. Actually, I found this. I can carry on with my work. Or maybe I've changed work, or I've stopped work, you know, or I've done this, or I've done that. And they give you tips and advice and guidance. And because it's coming from someone, from a trusted source, if you like, because that person has been through something very similar to you, and you know. And often, even in these cafes or groups or wherever you go, sometimes you don't even have to talk about your grief. You know, you can talk about what you're doing for the day, or, you know, what your job is, or the children, or whatever it is, or what's happening in your life, because there's a shared bond. There's an instant bond with people who have been through something, because you know they've been through the worst thing ever in your whole life. Mm. You know, Prince William says, you know, as you say, it's the most painful thing anyone ever goes through in their life.
It is.
It really is.
It is.
And it really needs support, and it needs recognition, and it actually needs more funding. You know, that's where we need it as well. All these organisations and charities are doing such an incredible job. And we need to recognise it as a nation that actually we need more education, because there's a lack of awareness and knowledge around grief and loss. Mm. And there's, you know, we're already sad, but, you know, what else can we do? But there's a lot we can do.
A lot.
You know, there's a lot.
Can I just ask, Linda, so in terms of sort of traditionally, sort of grief counselling and grief processing would traditionally have been the role of religion. I mean, that would have been the priest, and arguably still is. So in terms of the Good Grief Trust, I mean, is there a role for religion in this trust, or have you kept it secular? Just curious on that front.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We signpost to anybody of any faith, of any culture. Right. You know, we have many, many different cultures and faiths under our umbrella as well, because we try to help anybody, you know, any community, any sector who is grieving. You know, everybody needs to find what they need for themselves. So, no, we absolutely acknowledge everybody. I mean, and that includes things like losing a pet, you know, which is often thought of as something that we, you know, you can't possibly be that sad or
au contraire. No.
Absolutely.
Oh my
absolutely.
God. There are many people, you know, who can only show unconditional love to an animal, not a human, and therefore they feel more grief over the loss of a pet than actually perhaps the loss of a parent, for example, depending on what their situation
exactly.
was.
Exactly. And there's always been a hierarchy of grief as well, which is so wrong.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing a lot of work with HR departments and businesses and corporates to say, what is your bereavement policy? You know, you shouldn't just limit it to someone who's lost a dependent, for example, which is generally the, you know, the way. But thankfully, now that's changing. So people are so much more flexible. And they will say, for example, oh, it's the anniversary of your colleague, maybe who's lost somebody. And if that's happening next month, now we need to know that we need to be a little bit more gentle and kind and maybe give them the time off they need, you know, in those trigger months and trigger times during the year as well. So there's a lot more awareness, thankfully, now. There's a bit of a snowballing around grief and loss, thankfully, through all these amazing campaigns that are happening.
So going back to your own, your own journey, which was really the origin of what you've now created and everything that you now are. How is your own personal grief experience, for example, now versus 10 years ago? Because obviously time is a great healer. Now, that's I'm just going to just pause on that for a minute, because having experienced grief myself, I'm like, well, it is, but equally it isn't. So, you know, I still personally find, as you've just said, there are certain times of year where it gets triggered. There are certain places where it gets triggered. There's certain activities that happen in the calendar where it gets triggered. And often you will find some of the things that I found very difficult to process because of modern technology, which is brilliant in so many ways. But for example, I was minding my own business the other day, and then suddenly up on my phone triggered one of those memory things all by itself, because no doubt I could probably do something about it because I don't know how. But up it came, and I was minding my own business, and then bam, in came this thing when I was totally unaware. Or you could go on Facebook and then suddenly there's a picture, or, you know, and they're in the picture. You didn't even know that they were there. You've forgotten. And then, in it all comes again. I mean, how have you found that, if you don't mind me asking, about your own personal situation with all this? Because you've created so much goodness from your pain. But, like, just to talk to people, because you talk openly about it, where is that process now?
Well, I think, well, it's 10 years. And actually the 10th anniversary was probably the worst, to be honest. No, because you feel so far away from that person. And we know that with anniversaries, you know, often the first anniversary goes through in a fog and a mist and you don't know where you are. And often the second one is sometimes worse because you feel like they're further away and people are forgetting them, et cetera. And I feel that sometimes, you know, because I'm always trying to share photos of Graham and what he did as a director and where he was in his life, and to try and, you know, get people to remember him, because, you know, he deserves that. And we all deserve that, I think, which is why many of us, you know, try to create just memorials, maybe, to those people we've lost, and share those photos and those memories. But yeah, I'm like you. You know, often a photo will come up, or somebody will acknowledge the anniversary and send me a little message about something, and it just absolutely floors you, because it's something maybe you've never heard, you've never seen exactly what you're saying, or, you know, the smells. Well, if I, you know, perfumes and aftershaves, suddenly you think, oh my goodness, that's, you know, that's Graham. Or someone says something, or it's there all the time. And that, again, it's really important for friends and family to acknowledge that as well, because if suddenly your friend, you know, goes a bit strange or goes a bit quiet or starts crying or something, you know, that's fine, but just be there for them, because it will probably happen. You know, we often say, like, you know, going down the sort of Tesco's in the buying your cheese, if you've already bought that, you know, you normally buy that for your husband or your wife, and you suddenly see their favorite food or something, can absolutely rock you sideways. So it's just sort of being mindful that that's fine, it's normal, but just to try and have those sort of tools in place so that you can sort of navigate that. But for me, it's more like I have very happy memories. Feel sad for him, but he, you know, didn't get the life that he was really hoping for, as we all would with anybody. Like my dad, he's missed so much out. He's really missed more, so much. I'm grateful I've still got my mom. You know, I think gratitude helps me, to be honest. You know, I try and I'd sort of grab hold of gratitude so much, and I'm very, very thankful for everything I've got, and I'm very thankful for you know, the charity, really, and where we are and what we've achieved and who we're helping, because
it's amazing.
It's just ongoing.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you should say gratitude, because in Chinese medicine, so each of the key elements and organs has this low emotion, of which grief is the low emotion of the metal element, which is the lungs. But interestingly, the high emotion, which is what we call the alchemized state, is gratitude. So the way to kind of infuse grief is gratitude. Now, that is easier said than done. It's really easy for me to sit here and go, oh, just be grateful. And it's not, unless, and when you're going through the absolute eye of the needle with this, it's really hard to be grateful because you have nothing to feel grateful for because you're just sad and it's just loss. But interestingly that you said that totally unprompted by me, because you said it really helps you to be grateful. And you do, it is helpful to practice what I call the gratitude list, which is just despite everything. I used to find doing it in the evening was better because in the morning it was so heavy and I had no optimism. So I didn't really want to do anything. I normally found by the evening time I was almost kind of bored with it. So I had to kind of do something because I just had to do anything to stop feeling the way I felt. So having a piece of paper and just writing down anything that I was grateful for at all, even if I didn't really feel it, but sort of things that I kind of thought, well, okay, well, I do like tea and I just like drinking that water and I do like being in nature and I do love my dog, you know, but I had to really drag it out of myself. It wasn't like I sat there with a piece of paper going, now, what am I grateful for? Oh, life's wonderful. You know, I was at rock bottom with this. And if you'd asked me that question and I was sat there to myself at the time going, well, what are you grateful for? I'd have probably said the F word and said nothing. I just actually want to die myself because I don't want to be here. I don't want anything. Everything's nil and negative and void and finished. And I don't want it. But I forced myself to start thinking, well, all right, then I guess, yeah, no, I do love my dog. How could I not love my dog? I love my dog. Right. So I'm going to start with that. Now, not everyone has a dog, but, you know, most people do enjoy a cup of tea, a glass of water, as you say, a chat with a friend. You've talked about cafes and you think, well, yeah, tea, coffee, talking to someone. And the other way that I learned when I went through it myself was not to try and overload myself with too dramatic emotional advances. So my initial desire was to feel less wretched. Okay, not good, not great, not I feel fine, not even I feel okay, because I didn't. I just, the first step for me that took me out of the process was it made me feel less horrendous. That was it. And at that moment in time, I felt so horrendous that I actually was okay with less horrendous, because I thought, well, I'm fractionally better than I felt if I wasn't doing what I was doing. Now, the remedy for me was, interestingly, coming into this content, because I was already a qualified Chinese doctor at this point, practicing acupuncture, blah, blah, blah. But the Yang Sheng bit, which is all the self-care and all the stuff, I own your health stuff, that came out of my grief process, because I spent probably 3 months in deep grief where just nothing, just that ball of emotion that you described, where it's just horrendous. And out of desperation, no more, nothing, no great thing, no amazing light bulb moment, no, you know, someone came and some angel came, no, none of that. I was just, it was another 3 o'clock in the morning, crying myself, couldn't sleep, didn't want to be awake, didn't want anything. I just wanted to just stop. It was just awful. And I picked up this book that had been next to my bed for ages. And it was a book by Mantak Chia, who's just incredible, the grandmaster. And I could barely even read it because I had so many tears in my eyes. I don't even know how I read. I think I just looked at the pictures. But I just started to sort of, out of sheer boredom and desperation, I just thought, just look at this thing. Look at this book. You've had it there for ages. Look at it. And I put the light on. I started reading it, crying into it, like splodges of tears all over the pages. And I just literally just thought, it was weird. There was this moment of, it was in now, if I read that book now, I'd be inspired because my energy is balanced. And therefore something like that would come in and go, wow, it's amazing. Wow. Okay. But then it was just like, oh my God. And I felt less horrendous. And it's something that I advise with patients that I talk to, and I'm saying now here for free, just if you can find any kind of life belt of any sort, which is why I think it's so fantastic that your trust has got so much on offer, because you've just got to grab a plank of wood, I think. You've just got to grab it and get that breath, because it's in the lungs. So it's almost like Titanic, you know, Kate Winslet ends up on some old door, you know, but it kept her alive. And it is literally that. And that book for me was what it was. It took me, as the great master Lao Tzu said, the journey of a 1,000 miles starts with a single step. And I would say that the journey of grief, although you've said it doesn't have stages as such, and because it's not been defined like that, but it does have a journey for sure, because you have to kind of come out of where you are to start with into something else, because life inevitably moves on and you have to, in order to cope, you do have to, something has to sort of start going like this. Otherwise you can't live. And he says the journey of 10,000 miles starts with a single step. And for me, that was the step. It just, and then what happened was I went into this crazy 3-year process of study. I just read and read and read, highlighter pens, and I've got thousands of books in my house. People couldn't believe it. And then all of a sudden, it sort of somehow, I didn't need to read quite so much anymore. And then I suddenly realized that it wasn't making me feel less awful. I was suddenly starting to feel not bad. And then I was starting to feel sort of all right. And then I was sort of had some level of equilibrium, and just gently it started to sort of move itself. And then I was able to take on board perhaps a little bit more joy. I'd find myself, for example, smiling or not crying, or just being able to sleep for a few hours at night. It was just teeny tiny little baby steps. And for anyone listening to this, I personally found that extraordinarily useful. And I wish I'd sort of known that when I was going through the process, because I sort of stumbled across, as I said, out of pure desperation. Pure desperation. I don't know, does any of that resonate to you?
Absolutely. I think it's really important to people to give themselves the chance, you know, and to sort of pat themselves on the back for even getting up and going to work, or taking the children to school, or putting that kettle on, and whatever it is, it will take a long time, because it's completely draining of everything that you think was normal has gone. Everything is gone. Then there is a new normal that you've just got to get used to, but it will take a very, very long time. So as you were saying, maybe even people often write something in a journal as you go along. So in a few months' time, I remember my girlfriend did this, who lost her husband, and she said she couldn't believe how far she'd come. She read it in a few after a few months, because she thought she was still in a really bad state. But actually, reading the journal, she knew that she'd sort of come out of that really awful, awful stage, if you like. I don't use the word stage, but that period or time of her life. And she was living forward, and she didn't actually know that she was, but she'd written it down.
I totally agree. And I think, it's so helpful to help you, even if you feel that it's not doing any good at the time, because often you feel so wretched.
Scribble it down.
Yeah, just get it out, because you're absolutely right. Then when you go back to it and go, oh, I feel terrible. We do this, funnily enough, in acupuncture. Often it happens that patients will come in and you say, you've done 10 treatments, and they go, oh, I don't think it's working, nothing's changed. And you go back to your original notes, you go, well, how's your sleep? Oh, I get about 7 hours a night now. You go, well, when you started and I asked you that question, you said 3. Oh, and how's your energy levels? Give it out of 10. Oh, it's like 7 out of 10. Well, when you started, you were 4. And we have that written down, but because, you know, not everyone can have an acupuncture session, or can indeed afford it, or have the time to go. That's what the journal does. It gives you, you know, give yourself a number out of 10, and it's likely to be 1 out of 10 to start. Not that it's a competition, because it's not, but you just start by just giving yourself some markers, and there's no time. There's no right or wrong, as you said. There's no good. There's no, this is the formula. As you said, it affects everyone differently.
Yeah. And we've got so many messages, like, for example, on the National Grief Awareness Week website, a portfolio of images and messaging that we've done over the years. If, for example, as you were saying, one of them says, just because I'm smiling doesn't mean I'm grieving.
Yeah.
So that's really important to remember that. And often, even say a name. You know, I'm thinking about them anyway, say their name, because often we don't want to say that person's name who's died, because we think that might trigger people and upset them, but they're thinking about them anyway. So it's actually a gift to do that, you know, to talk about the person. So there's so many messages that actually walks the taboo around and bust that sort of misnomer, if you like, because there are so many misconceptions around grief, what you should do and what you shouldn't do, how long it's meant to take. And again, another one is there's no timeline for grief. You know, we've got a clock and there's no timeline, or we've got an age timer thing. So it's all about trying to just get rid of it all, do it your way, whatever way that is, as long as it's helping you and you're feeling better and you're being supported. It doesn't matter how long it takes. You know, it's going to be with you forever, but you will in time manage it better. I mean, there's all these analogies about, you know, the glasses, the jars with a ball of grief inside. So the ball stays the same, but the jar gets bigger for your life.
Oh, that's so,
so
everything
true. Around. Yeah, because, you know, your grief will always be the same size, but your life will grow around it, you know. And hopefully there are some lovely analogies and lovely images with sort of flowers around the grief and things, so that you actually create really lovely life for yourself despite the grief that's still there. It's still there, it's not going anywhere, because the person you've lost is still with you. No, they're just not physically with you, that's all.
Exactly. Linda, honestly, so interesting talking to you, and what a gift you've given everyone creating this trust. A gift of such value out of such extreme pain is arguably the highest value of gift of any soul could offer anyone. So, I mean, we're all so grateful to you because there's so many thousands of people you're helping with through what you've experienced. So I just want to say how grateful on behalf of everyone will be for this, because you're absolutely right. You know, we need this. It's something which, as I said, probably historically has been sort of managed by religion. And, you know, as that sort of changed and undulated over the centuries, you know, suddenly it's come back in a fresh format, which, as I've said, sort of non-secular, openly secular, whatever it is so helpful to everyone and gives people some resource to help them. So thank you so much for coming on the show today and giving us such amazing insight. And thank you for sharing your wonderful journey with us. It's very painful and poignant and so greatly appreciated. So I'm so grateful. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Just to say, you know, that you're not alone. If you're grieving, you're not alone. You know, we're here for you. The Good Grief Trust is there. Please look at the website. Please access the support that is right for you at the right time for you. We've got some love campaigns you can get involved in. You know, you can go out into the community and meet other people. And just to say, we launched a really lovely campaign last year that we've not mentioned called Help and Hope. So we've actually got plaques now with a QR code and they say Help and Hope. And they're on benches and seats across the UK. So anyone out walking the dog or going down to the beach or at a bus stop can sit on a bench and talk to somebody else and then just scan the QR code and find a Good Grief Trust.
Wow.
We're just trying to help anyone. Yeah.
I mean, your creative powers are just like, they've got no limits. It's amazing. I'm like, wow, all these. But it's brilliant. I mean, it's just brilliant. Everywhere you go, it's just like, bam, 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 bam. And you just think, wow, that is just incredible. So thank you. Oh, honestly, thank you so much. I could talk to you for hours. But Linda, thank you so much. And everyone watching, do please have a look at the Good Grief Trust and share this with anybody that you know who's going through this, because it is an absolute emotion which is so, so horrendous. It's the worst of the human emotions and absolute agonising. If anyone's been through it, you know, they would all agree. So thank you so much for addressing this. We're so grateful to you. Thank you.
Thank you for asking me. It's been a huge pleasure. Thank you.